Pass the U.S. MLE. Welcome to the 172nd episode of Admission Straight Talk, the podcast dedicated to graduate admissions and helping you approach the application process thoughtfully and successfully. I'm Linda Abraham, the founder of Accepted and the host of this podcast. My mission and passion is to help you get to that delightful moment when you can high-five the person next to you and shout, "Yes, I'm in." And not only in, but in at the best program for you. Now, my goal with this show, as I just said, is to help you get into the best graduate school for you. And if I succeed and you are accepted to a school that will help you become a physician because that's where you're applying to and because you're also succeeding, the next step on your journey is med school and the US MLE or the COMLEX exams. Today's guest is going to address studying for those critical and very demanding exams. Dr. Marcel Bruce Raymer attended Rutgers, where he earned an undergrad degree in economics. He attended Columbia from 2002 to 2010, where he got his MD and PhD in neurobiology. He then did his residency at UCSF in radiology and biomedical imaging, and capped it all off with a fellowship in neuroradiology, also at UCSF. In 2009, he started tutoring, and he founded Elite Medical Prep almost exactly a year ago in August 2015. He's here today to give us study tips for medical school and the STEP exams, as well as to talk about his company, Elite Medical Prep. Marcel, welcome to Admission Straight Talk.
Thank you for having me.
I'm delighted you could join us this morning. Now, I gave a really broad outline of your background. Can you discuss a little bit the decision points? How did you choose radiology? Why did you choose to get the MD, PhD, the fellowship, all that stuff?
Okay. So let's start, I guess, chronologically. So I was in college and I did some research. I really liked it. I knew I wanted to go to medical school. I figured I'm going to go to medical school and I may do a year of additional research in the middle, maybe 2 years of additional research. And then when I looked at the process, I thought, let's consider applying for an MD, PhD, because the education's paid for and it's just a little bit more research. I say little bit meaning it actually turns out to be two more years, more than 2 years. So it was 4 years to do the PhD in the middle of my medical education. It was challenging. There were times where I probably thought that I should stop in the middle when the experiments weren't going well. But in the end, I don't regret anything. I think some of the best moments in my life occurred because of that. One of the important things that came up during my PhD research after completing first 2 years of medical school was that I was able to get exposed to some components of clinical practice in medicine. I worked with some neurosurgeons, and I had always sort of styled myself as a future neurosurgeon, a future maybe neurologist doing interventions, very high risk type stuff. And I realized that that lifestyle wasn't really going to fit very well with my family life and my family goals. And I started looking at other things, and some of my colleagues from medicine who had moved ahead in the clinical side while I was doing research, they started considering radiology and started doing it. And I realized, you know, this is actually what I thought of when I thought of medicine. Radiology is a lot like what you think of a Sherlock Holmes mystery. It just happens really fast. You have lots of clues, you have bits of pieces of information, you put them all together, and then you come up with a diagnosis or a list of diagnoses. And that was always the most fun portion of medicine for me. Some people love treating, and some people love doing other components of medicine. Some people like the talking and teasing out things from like a psychological standpoint. I like the sort of Sherlock Holmesian portion. The bonus side of radiology is that what you don't realize is that there's a lot of treatment you get to do, I get to do a lot of procedures, and so I get to actually help patients work with them directly. I'm not just excluded in a reading room. So that's been great.
All right, that is great. How did you get involved with tutoring and test prep?
So as I mentioned, I had a family. At the time I was finishing up medical school, I was married. I had one kid and another kid on the way. And actually, I finished a little off cycle, so I had a bit of extra time after I was finished. And I was looking for something to do with the free time. I'd already done research. I didn't want to do more. And I wanted to make some money because I wasn't in school anymore and we had some bills to pay. So I actually saw a flyer from a small company that did medical tutoring. I called them, we interviewed, I started working for them. It turned out that they were just like a couple people, you know, run by a business person who had a medical friend. And I helped them to grow their business. And in the process of that, ended up meeting my co-director of Elite Medical Prep, Dr. Ken Rubin, who we worked together for a number of years. And the two of us and another guy who's still at that other company, we worked extensively on this. I did a lot of tutoring and also a lot of thinking about how to train tutors and how to think about medical education, how interplayed with pre-medical education and post, you know, USMLE education after you finish medical school, and sort of naturally developed. As I continued this tutoring work in my training, you know, my training got more intense, and I had to sort of stop. Just there was too many things going on, so I stepped away for about a year. And then Dr. Rubin came back and contacted me and asked in 2015 if I'd like to consider, you know, joining a venture that he had started, and so we decided to help him out there, and we saw how I'd participate, and it looks like, you know, now it's been sort of, you know, going very strong. So even though we've only been around for about a year in terms of the calendar, we've been doing this for now 6 years, both of us, and so our experience sort of is much greater than the history of our company.
Your site says that Elite Medical Prep works with pre-meds. What services does your company provide for pre-meds?
We do work with pre-medical students as well as also medical students. Typically for pre-medical students, we'll offer them guidance, strategy, particularly as regards to coursework, and also then helping to work specifically on specific topics of knowledge. Dr. Rubin has a lot of experience in that regard. He's done a lot of extensive MCAT tutoring work in that regard. And so we will help to prepare people particularly for the MCAT, but also we may do science tutoring that's specific to sort of certain needs. Wrapped into that will be a limited amount of strategy work, also advising in sort of specific fashion. And then it's sort of tied together with our expertise in medicine. We're both MDs. I'm a practicing MD. He is not, but our foundation and knowledge base is, you know, is extensive because of the continued practice. And we try to bring the same methodology we use in the medical level tutoring to the pre-medical level tutoring. So we have the interplay of those two things.
So you do provide MCAT test prep also?
Right. It's not really a focus at this point. We've sort of let our company progress organically, grow organically, and we mm-hmm. found that right now there's a really a greater need for people in the medical level tutoring, the USMLE level tutoring, and so we've put more focus on that. But we do have specific clients who are looking for MCAT tutoring. You know, I think we offer sort of a very relatively elite service, sorry to use that term, but
it's in your name.
I think it's accurate. We're MDs. We're not just MDs from anywhere. We're MDs from top schools, all of the tutors. You know, and we did well on these exams, MCAT as well, USMLE as well. These are very challenging exams, and we do offer those services. Not all of our tutors, particularly the ones who are near the end of their training, are interested in doing that, but we do have a subset of tutors who do MCAT tutoring on a more limited basis. It's something we will probably develop out more as we grow and as we discover where we fit within that market. I guess the bottom line is we definitely do offer it. It's just not as much of a focus at this time.
Okay. What services does Elite Medical Prep provide for allopathic and osteopathic medical students?
So, you know, it's a good question. Allopathic, osteopathic, I think many people are confused, particularly pre-med students, what the difference is. It's really historical, and there's also some curricular differences. What it functionally comes down to is most allopathic schools are what we call the MD schools, and they're typically older and more established, more prestigious. You know, Harvard and Columbia, they would fit under allopathic, as would most state schools, you know, University of Michigan, North Carolina. The osteopathic schools tend to be smaller in number and much younger in age. They, because of the nature of the way their historical setup, they have a different test that they need to get their license than the people who go to the traditional MD school. So allopathic is MD, osteopathic is DO. That's what the initials mean. Functionally, they're both doctors. The allopathic students and the allopathic test, the USMLE, and the osteopathic test, the COMLEX, are very similar. Oftentimes, the osteopathic students, those who have to take the COMLEX, also take the USMLE. So they end up taking two tests. So when we offer services targeted at the USMLE, we're implicitly targeting the COMLEX as well. We can cover that material. Previously, I've worked with some outstanding students who graduated from osteopathic schools who did tutoring for that and did specifically focus on the COMLEX. But I've taught for the COMLEX. Dr. Rubin's taught for the COMLEX, which is for the osteopaths. But the majority of what we do our tutoring for is for the USMLE, which is for that. And then the services are largely similar. I can describe them in greater detail if you'd like.
Okay. Well, that kind of leads to my next question. What does elite medical prep do differently, or what unmet need is it attempting to meet that other tutoring companies, because you do have competition, mm-hmm. you know, what are you doing differently? What are you doing better?
Great. When I said we started, both I and Dr. Rubin started with another company, the company we started with was called Med School Tutors. I still have many close friends there. That company is the sort of the leader in from a historical standpoint, and I think probably by numbers in our field of medical test prep at the level of USMLE level. The difference between us and them, there are differences that are not so great and differences that are. I get asked this question all the time, and really I think a couple fundamental differences. Our company is fundamentally run and final decisions are made by MDs. Both I and Dr. Rubin make final decisions, particularly Dr. Rubin. I think he's the more experienced tutor, very experienced in tutor training, and all decisions are made finally by MDs. And the way that that's important is whenever we make a decision, whether it be small and administrative, whether it be the way that we communicate with students, the way that we categorize information, the way that we try to remove excess burdens on time, it's all designed from the standpoint of knowing that we were once medical students and that we were once in those shoes. We know how it is to feel pressured to make really important decisions without complete knowledge that can have dramatic effects on your career. The things that are different about us versus just most companies is that we offer more than just token training as far as what we train our tutors. I think a lot of companies, they say, oh, you're an MD, you went to a great school, you must be smart, you must know how to teach this information. That doesn't cut it for us. We really do put, we go out and seek out the best people we can find from a resume standpoint and from a presentation standpoint and from a teaching history, and then we train them up to an even higher level. This is not something that just comes to you naturally. There are very few people who can just tutor fantastically. And I was just before speaking with you, I was doing a tutor training. We put our tutors through an extensive training, and these are people who are already excellent. On paper, they're fantastic. So that's an important thing. We work specifically on tutoring skills. The other thing that we do is we try to take these people and not just, take these smart people and not just make them, smarter, but we try to make them great teachers. And I remember Dr. Rubin in talking about this topic mentioned a tutor who's at another company now who said to him, once, I became not just a better medical student, but also a better physician because of that. And what she meant is that the skills that are used in imparting this information as a tutor to these students helps actually teach you to explain information to your colleagues and also to your patients, and so it becomes important clinically. The other thing is, we stylistically, because we're run by MDs, we emphasize always keeping the style that is used in a hospital setting. So we're sort of steeped in terminology that are used in medicine, such as rounds, such as informed consent. We try to use that throughout, and that's important because that's how we were trained and that's how we think about things. A couple other things that I think from a financial standpoint that are interesting are, tutoring is not cheap, especially this level of tutoring. It's very expensive in some ways, for some people, but the quality that it's provided is excellent. And one of the things that we know is that these are major decisions financially for students. We offer all students a full refund on any unused hours of tutoring. So the goal here is if you really don't like this or you decide you don't want to do this anymore, you want to go on vacation in Bali, you want to quit medicine, you're just not ready to provide tutoring, any unused time you haven't, that you've paid for already, we'll refund it, no questions asked. And I think that's something that no other service does. And that's in part because we stand behind the quality of our product, but also because we know what it's like to be in a decision where you have to put down a significant amount of money, and then you may not want that, you may not be ready for it, and you get stuck. So we don't want to leave people in that position.
Actually, Accepted has the same policy in terms of refund, and for similar reasons, we don't want people to get stuck. That's great. Now, your site, let's go back to Elite Medical Prep, though. Your site describes its approach to tutoring as evidence-based. What does that mean in this context?
Yeah, so this is actually something that's a great question, and I think a lot of our students don't really ask us about this, but this is something that I give kudos to Dr. Rubin for really digging deep on this. I think both of us were really touched by this book. It's called The Tutoring Revolution, and it's scientific. It was a book that was written by a number of researchers, I think back in 2007. It took essentially a real academic inquiry into the optimal methodology for tutoring in all contexts. And so it's using an evidence-based sort of system. It's using real research to think about the concept of tutoring. Tutoring is a major part of our modern world. It's more and more used across every level of education. It was highlighted in a relatively well-known New Yorker article by Atul Gawande, who's a well-known surgeon and writer at Brigham and Women's Hospital in the Harvard system. And the six things that were sort of distilled, that we distilled from that book when reading it and reviewing it, you know, were a couple things. One, take away these six components in terms of the way we approach our tutoring. One is we want all of our tutors to be professionally prepared consistently produce higher levels of student achievement than tutors who are not professionally prepared. So we always focus on really high quality preparation. I think that's important. We don't just pick great people and throw them out there. We make sure that they're put through a rigorous training process. We also emphasize that tutors use a developmental template to organize and implement to the student's tutoring program. So we focus on a structured tutoring approach. We like to use a collaborative approach if necessary, and we make sure that the tutors are able to sort of take that structure and then be flexible in building out a structure for the client, so that they can get the maximize the tutoring time and the opportunity. We also make sure that we coach the students, as tutors coach the students on how to learn, not just what we're learning, but how to learn the information, how to learn it on their own. Teach a man to fish. It's for a lifetime type of thing. So that's very, very important. The other thing is that not just teaching students how to learn, but we want to give them, talk to them about the habits that they need for optimal testing and for study day. And then another thing that we do that we think is very, very important is in evidence-based, you want evidence. So we track the session, session by session progress of all of our students. And we use a system that allows us to easily sort of check in with our students without interrupting the sessions, but also to follow along with via logs and via session reports. We try to emphasize always that numbers and data whenever possible, whenever available, so we know where we stand, and the student knows where they stand. We don't want to leave them in the lurch on test day, 10, 15 points short of passing. That can be a real problem for them. We also emphasize, and this comes from the book, continuous feedback, and the goal is to taking from the book is to develop them a positive self-image as a learner. And so it's important that we teach the student what's important, call it out when they're wrong, but also do it in a positive manner so that we're not going to suppress their desire and energy to learn. I guess the last thing, and number six on this list, and sort of I'm going through, it's a document we provide to all of our potential clients, is that we formally and informally assess the students throughout the training. And these six things we think are really key to providing an excellent tutoring opportunity.
Okay. Does your background in neurology play any role in your approach to tutoring?
My background in radiology and neuroradiology, it does more and more than I think about it. The thought process that you use in radiology is, I see something, okay, what does that mean? What are the possibilities? Let's think about it. So see the possibility, see some kind of finding. You list out mentally list out the differential diagnosis, and then you start eliminating why it's not, and you look for clues as to why it's not. And that's actually how we approach a lot of the questions. We take in the information that's in the question stem, look at the answer choices, and then use process of elimination to remove that. And it's very similar to the process. And that's something I've gleaned from some, being around some top doctors when I was at UCSF and also at Columbia. I think that applies. And also, the tests across the board are becoming more image rich. And so, that application is being over as well.
Okay. What are some of your top prep tips for students approaching the USMLE or the step exam?
Okay, so number one tip for USMLE, I would say definitely what you want to focus on is picking a structured plan and following through on that. That is extremely important. You don't want to be sort of jumping from one plan to the next, because you'll end up getting nothing fully done. You'll have a lot of half-baked stuff. Within that context, you also want to pick a limited number of resources so you're not incompletely finishing those resources. You want to work with a limited number of things to focus your attention. Fundamentally, though, the USMLE, like all tests, is about answering questions correctly, so it is extremely important that you do questions and you practice questions. It is also extremely important that you put yourself in in testing situations. So you want to sort of measure your progress regularly. That in more detail can be borne out, and we can talk about that when we work with clients, but it means taking practice tests at regular intervals and at appropriate times, interpreting those appropriately, reviewing those questions appropriately, and then doing a certain number of questions per day, depending on the test and then and the point phase of studying, so that you're getting enough practice. You learn more from getting a question wrong than you do from reading 10 pages of a textbook, invariably.
Right. Well, you learn that way. You can figure out what you're doing wrong. You can also look at what you're doing right, if you go over it.
Right, right. So yeah, so there are a lot of sort of details in the process that we use of tutoring. But I sometimes say to people, you know, if I talk to a patient about their clinical problem and they say I have belly pain and they're describing they have belly pain all over, I might say to them, you know, just show me with one finger where the pain hurts the worst, and then that'll help me focus. Is it the right or the left, upper or lower abdomen? And so when I bring that context to tutoring, they say, what's the one most important actual activity I can do in terms of my preparation? I say, do questions and review them. That is the number one activity.
Okay, great. Thank you. Let's say there's a pre-med student applying this year to medical school. She's reasonably confident she'll get in somewhere. Let's even say she's taking a gap year, so she graduated in June. Between her graduation and starting medical school. She's continuing to volunteer for the moment, but intends to do some serious traveling after she gets accepted. Is there anything you recommend that pre-med do during the year before she starts medical school that will help her ease her way into medical school and ultimately into success on the STEP exams? I mean, every medical student I've ever spoken with says that, you know, the first year of medical school is absolutely grueling simply because of the volume of information you're expected to learn. So is there anything that they can do to prepare?
So when I think about that question, I say the very first thing, and maybe this is not what you want to hear, but the very first thing that comes to mind is enjoy your time off before your first year.
The same, actually. That's what I was thinking you'd say, actually. But go ahead.
I'll give you a real answer in a second, but let me explain why. You have to keep in mind that once you start medical school, you do your first year in the classic organization of curriculum. You do your first year of medical school, then you get a summer off. That is the last summer off you will have the rest of your life unless you just stop working and mean going on unpaid. You have no summer vacations are over after your first year of medical school after that first summer. You have no more summer vacation. You are now in the world of the working. You will do 2 week to 4 week vacations and that's it. So think about it that time and consider, you know, what you really want to do with your time, what you'd like to do for yourself. That's important. Now, once school starts, then you should be able to start adopting very professional habits of studying. You should treat medical school a bit like a job. It is a profession. You want to be professional about it. And the reason why I say, you know, enjoy your time off is the following. If you've been accepted to a medical school, particularly if you've been accepted to a U.S.-based medical school, allopathic tend to be more competitive, but a U.S.-based medical school, the medical school already assumes that you are capable of doing the coursework, even though it's grueling. If you go ahead and you try to learn all this stuff in advance, you're going to forget most of it anyway, and you're going to have to relearn it. So you may have just spent a summer slaving away in the library when you could have enjoyed yourself. Probably wouldn't change the outcome. Now, that comes off wishy-washy, and that students want to hear, well, what do I actually
practical.
Do? Well, you know, some people are like, but come on, Dr. Bruce Stramer, what would I do if I really want to study, I want to do something, I'm really worried. Okay, so here's what I would say. If you're adamant that you want to study something before medical school starts, I might recommend the following. You could review a text on biochemistry. You could maybe do some review on anatomy. But when I say that review on biochemistry, I say it because many medical students don't teach biochemistry anymore. They expect you to learn it before you get into school. And when I say learn biochemistry, I say don't look at your college textbooks. All those college textbooks, you can sell them off or use them as doorstops or just, you know, recycle them. They are no longer good. What I mean is get a very simplified, relatively thin book that gives like at the level of a prep, like a USMLE prep level of reference book that you can use to sort of skim through and learn some background stuff. Biochemistry is something that seems to torture every student. It may be low yield overall, but if you're really adamant you want to do something, I might do that. That would be about it.
Okay, that sounds like a pretty fun assignment, actually. Sounds, like I said, it just sounds very practical to me and very real. Some students are concerned that if they struggle with the MCAT, they will also struggle with the STEP exams and the board exams and all the exams. I mean, I think sometimes pre-meds think, oh, I got the MCAT done, I'm done. They're just starting. There's a whole slew of exams they're going to be taking during and after medical school. Do you find that that's true, that people who struggle with the MCAT will struggle later?
All right, so Linda, first of all, I want to tell you, your comment is completely true. If you think you're going to medical school, and once you get into medical school, it's all over, you've done it, you've made it, there's no more, the struggle is over, you just have to pass from here on out. Yes, all you have to do at a minimum level is pass, but there are more tests and more tests. And if you think after you finish medical school that the tests have ended, they have not. And if you think you have your residency and the tests have finished, they have not. There will be tests the rest of your life. Modern medicine is about taking tests. So be prepared to take tests. Now, reflecting back to your question, if you struggle with the MCAT, will you struggle with the STEP exams? This is definitely a valid concern. There is a strong link between MCAT and USMLE scores, and that's tends to be because there's the similar techniques that are used to learn for these exams and similar aptitude and sort of natural ability at doing these exams, you know, tend to overlap. There's different material, different style of question, but there tends to be a lot of overlap between the two things. Whenever, just for example, whenever we talk with a student about it, we do an initial intake, like a patient intake, and we refer to it as that. We take their student history. We ask them about their testing history, and we oftentimes go back to the level of their SAT. We want to look for a pattern of ability or difficulty with these standardized exams, and that helps to sort of give us a perspective on what we may need to do when we work with the student. You know, many students have, you know, they have the energy, the effort, the intellectual chops to sort of make a competitive medical application, and they haven't actually used the best study habits in order to get there. They just have gone on the strength of their sort of natural ability and some, you know, the way that they've been working. But when you get to medical school, you know, when you get to the MCAT and then more so when you get to the USMLE, you start to encounter this phenomenon of there's just too much information and too much to cover. And you end up getting pushed harder than ever, and just working harder doesn't necessarily cut it. You have to work smarter. You have to work more efficiently. So, you know, in that light, just to give you perspective, many of the physicians I talk to will consider the USMLE the hardest exam they will ever take in their entire career. Wow. At any point. It is sort of the hardest single exam. It's that exam. The first step one, is taken somewhere in the middle of medical school, usually after your second year of medical school. Mm-hmm. It is considered the hardest exam, and that's because it's a plethora of information that much of which you won't use as actively after you do that exam, and it's tons of information, and it's a lot of reasoning on top of that. So it's like an MCAT plus tons of content. So, you know, just as perspective on that, I've worked with some, like, you know, very, very famous physicians in their field, people who have won gold medals in their respective field. This is like a huge honor for lifetime achievement, and they're fantastic clinicians. And I've talked to them, and I know just from working with them, they would fail the USMLE Step 1 if they had to retake it today again without any preparation.
Wow. Completely.
There's too much information, and each field of medicine is so focused, you end up losing some of that stuff. You don't think about the biochemistry as much. So there are very few clinicians I know who are actively practicing for more than a few years who would be able to pass USMLE cold without preparation. If they prepared, they'd be fine.
Right. Well, that makes sense, actually. I mean, that's true of so many exams and so much of what you learn, that it may not have a practical application to the specific direction that you take. You get this broad-based knowledge, and then you pick from it to a certain extent. Now, you've completed your formal medical education, I think, and are now in the role of educator of physicians. From your perspective, what skills or traits do you feel pre-med should develop in themselves if they want to be successful medical students and ultimately great physicians? And I'm not talking here about grades and test scores, which I realize we've been talking about a lot. I'm talking about more character traits, good listening, softer skills, if you will.
Okay, so I took this more as almost as a technical skill, but not a technical skill of getting good grades per se. But yeah. From the perspective of being a good or a great doctor, I think one of the most important things, particularly in the modern era, is to develop your writing skills. You have to understand if you're going to be a physician, no matter what field of medicine in, you are going to write a lot. You're either going to do it via dictations, you're going to either speak it into a dictaphone or some kind of computer transcribing service, or you're going to write the notes. Modern medicine is about documenting what happened, and then figuring it out, and then discussing a plan about what you're going to do and what hopefully will happen in response to that, and then doing it all again the next day, and the next day, and the next day, over and over and over again. It is about writing. And when you're a clinician and you're working as a radiologist, particularly, we're specialists, we're called the doctor's doctor. We're called in to help other doctors. The thing that is most valuable is a very well-written note, and that's something that's concise and clear and captures all the relevant information in a very coherent pattern. A poorly written note is a problem, and it affects medical care dramatically. So working on your writing skills, working on your reading skills. Other things that I would say is try to read widely. Oftentimes, reading books, magazines, do audiobooks if you don't have time. I listened to Game of Thrones while riding my bicycle to work for a couple months. But the reason why that's important, though, from the more specific, is there are cultural, historical, zoological pieces of information and knowledge that you can take away from these things that can help you when you're working as a clinician. I remember numerous cases where there were oddball things that if you knew about some geographical location or the people in that area or the exposures that they could have, you could help piece together the likely diagnosis. Now that people travel around the world, and particularly in major cities, we see patients coming from all over the world. You may see very rare diagnoses in your what would seemingly be a community hospital. And so having that sort of breadth of knowledge can be very useful in that setting. You just don't know when it'll come up. Finally, at a relational level, like with talking with people, when you make a patient feel comfortable, just like when I work with a student, you make them feel comfortable about the situation. A lot of times that comes from just finding common ground. You may talk about sports, may talk about culture, whatever. Those things are important, and I think that soft skill can go a long way with patients, even if you don't have the right diagnosis or you don't have the magic treatment to sort of cure them. I think they really appreciate that, and can make them, can help them feel better about that moment, whether it be something where you're curing them or you're telling them very bad news, about some incurable disease or whatnot.
Okay, thank you. What's the question you wish I would have asked you?
I think the one thing is, are you happy with your decision to be a doctor, and would you do it all over again? I think that's the thing that I've asked myself. I think the answer is yes. Definitely, I'm happy with my decision to be a doctor. I would do it all over again. But I'll tell you, it was not an easy process. It was not always an easy process. I overall enjoyed the process, and I think that's important. I enjoyed the process, not just the results. If you were just about getting the results, getting the degree, getting the specialty, getting the paycheck, whatever it is at the end, you're not going to be happy because the process is pretty grueling. There's a lot going on. You have to enjoy portions of the process. It's not going to be your favorite activity all the time, but you should enjoy the process overall and be prepared for that. You should understand that there are a lot of personal sacrifices that are made. You give up a lot of things in your personal life in order to do this, even for specialties like mine, which are more flexible. When you do stuff like neurosurgery, orthopedic surgery, pediatric surgery, surgical specialties particularly, you're going to have to give up even more of your personal time. Another thing that I think that is great about medicine is just generally treating patients feels really, really good. It's really cool. You get that moment where you have the feedback of having improved quality of life in the patient or prevented some worse problem, averted a disaster. You feel really great about yourself, whether it's as a radiologist, you made the great call and you picked up something or you prevented some, more invasive tests from happening or, in any other specialty. It feels really great. And then I think the most important things that I tell students, particularly people when they're asking advice about career and such, is that just because you go to medical school and you get an MD doesn't mean you have to practice as a doctor. Yes, I think being a doctor is great and it's super cool, but even if I didn't want to actually practice medicine as a doctor, I think getting an MD was one of the best experiences because there are so many cool things out there that you can do that are very meaningful. You can help people's lives. And an MD is a fantastic experience, sort of unparalleled as compared to anything else. I think it's in some ways better than grad school in terms of preparing you for the real world. It teaches you tons of things. So I think that, there's a lot of benefits. You should not just lock yourself into what type of medicine am I going to do. You could say, I can do things outside of medicine, outside of the practice of medicine that are related to healthcare. And that would be important.
That's a wonderful perspective. Thank you very, very much. I particularly appreciate actually, I enjoyed the whole interview. So, Marcel, thank you so much for a wonderful interview. Where can listeners learn more about your work, specifically about Elite Medical Prep?
So you can visit our website. It's www.elitemedicalprep.com. That's all one word. That's elitemedicalprep.com. We can be easily found on the web, and we have more information about our services and about our tutors and about our team.
Great.
Feel free to look us up.
Okay. We'll include links in the show notes at accepted.com/172, and that will link to Elite Medical Prep. Listeners, thank you, too, for joining us for our 172nd episode. Gosh, that's a big number. I have a favor to ask. If you found this show helpful, tell a friend about the podcast. Let them in on it so they, too, can access the information found here. And if you're not yet a subscriber, you can subscribe either through iTunes, Stitcher, or Zoom. This is Admission Straight Talk, produced by Accepted, and I am your host, Linda Abraham. I'll talk to you again next week.
Our theme music is provided by podcastthemes.com.